Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, Rangers of the Dork Forest. It's me, Jackie Cation, and you are listening to the Dork Forest. You can go to the websites, JackieCation.com and DorkForest.com. JackieCation.com has DorkForest.com. It has the audio links. It has the video links to my YouTube. It has all of my dates for stand-up comedy. It has all the merch. It's got Dork Forest merch and stand-up merch and all of my CDs and DVDs if you have those devices. Other things you can do, Bandcamp. There's a Bandcamp with the very old episodes. Some of them are free. And then there's a storytelling album that you can get on my Bandcamp. And I'm on Pandora and Spotify. It is 2025, and feel free to start donating to the Dork Forest. Yeah, cost me about 10 grand a year to put this up. If everybody donated $100 every year, if everybody just handed me $100 every time they saw me, or PayPal, Venmo, then I would have, I think, about 10 grand. I don't know, but I would have enough money to run this and probably buy myself lunch. And I'm a big fan of doing the show. I'll do it anyway. But if you have $100, send me $100. If you have $2, send me $2. You can do it monthly on PayPal. There's buttons all over my website. And my Venmo is just my name. No hyphen, Jackie Cation. I'm wearing a red shirt. Let's get into the show. It's me, Jackie Cation, very fancy. There's a countdown on Riverside now, and it's the Dork Forest Rangers. How the hell are you? We're going to talk about death, you guys. It's TJ Ford, my old roommate from college, has been on one other time. I think you talked marathons. Welcome back to the show, TJ.
And bats. We also talked about bats.
Oh, right. This is my third episode, I know. Imagine.
I'm so honored.
It's beautiful. It's. I was just talking. Who was I talking to? Maria Bamford, about how cool your life has been.
Aww.
And it's over, I guess. That's the weird thing about this age, is that we're talking about has been.
Has been.
That's not the way to put that.
Yeah.
But you lived in China. You lived in Oxford, England. You've been all over the world. You've ran with the people. Mm-hmm. Did you ever run with the bulls, TJ?
I have never run with the bulls, and I do not ever plan to. They have horns.
Right. I don't think you're running with the bulls. I feel like you're running away from the bulls. They call it with them. Mm. But I think the bulls have not been alerted.
No,
you are running with them.
The bulls did not invite me, so no. Not going.
So you have always, the bat thing, all of our lives, you have been fascinated by death.
Yeah.
And let me say that you've decided to go into it as an industry.
Absolutely.
Because what the heck? As we hit our what do they call it? Our third act. So if people want to check it out, they can go to deathready.org, i.e. being ready for death. There's also a newsletter on Substack called Death Ready with TJ. Right. And you have at Death Ready Coach on Instagram that you say you've yet to do anything with.
Well, I do some, but you know, it's Instagram.
Are you hoping for coffin sponsorship? What are you hoping for?
Hey, I hadn't thought of that. Let me write that down. Perfect.
So everybody dies, TJ. Is that what I'm told?
That's what I'm telling you. Everybody
dies. That's what you're telling me. Okay, yeah. Everybody dies.
It's the only thing that we all share in common.
What about taxes? What about Ben Franklin?
If you're rich
taxes?
Enough, you can hide your taxes.
That's right. You can get away from
someplace. Yeah.
Oh, right. So death is the only thing that's left.
Absolutely. The only thing.
Hmm. All right. How long have you been interested in death? Since birth? What's
happening? My whole life, since birth. Because as soon as you're born, you're starting to die. And I mean that in a cheerful way.
I was going to say, how was that childhood? How cheerful was that?
My goal is to make it not morbid to talk about death. It's another piece of our, as you said, act, right? It's like our best and final act. Why can't it be our best? Let's go out blazing.
Interesting. Have you seen many people die?
I have seen a few die. And
There doesn't seem to be, I've seen a couple people die. There doesn't seem to be a lot of dignity in it.
Well, that's a whole other conversation. Death with
dignity. Well, we got an hour, my friend.
Death with dignity.
I suppose that's why people kind of want to die in their sleep, because that is the most, otherwise, if you're awake, it's going to be you gasping for air and then not getting it and then dying, from what I've seen.
Well, that can happen. Yeah. And we can't all determine how exactly and when exactly we're going to die, but we can.
You can go to Seattle.
You go to Switzerland is where you go.
I thought you could also go to Seattle, and though I know California is you can choose to die, but there's a lot of paperwork. They're not going to just let you go.
No, there's a lot of paperwork. There are 11 states where you can have death with dignity, which is many rules. You have to be.
And that's what it's called?
Death with dignity. Yeah. It's also called MAID, medical aid in dying. But that's a little corporate sounding for me. I like death with dignity. I don't like the corporatization of death. Like, I don't like the corporatization of anything.
Too late.
So there are 11 states where you can do it, but they're very restrictive, because we don't want people just, you know, offing grandma because they're tired of her, right? So you have to be terminally ill. You have to have a psychologist talk to you. You have to have two doctors, and you can't have dementia. And that's kind of a very scary thing for a lot of people, because like me.
Because that's when you want to go.
Yeah, that's when you want
to go. Yeah, that's when you want to head out.
Right.
You're like, oh, I'm sorry. Am I not only a burden on you? I have no clue.
Right.
And yeah.
But you have to be careful about the burden thing. You're not a burden. We don't talk about that.
Nobody talks about being a burden?
No, because then the doctors don't want to sign off. Because
don't use that when you're talking to them about possible death with dignity.
Correct. Because then they say, well, that's not a reason. You need to really want to die for yourself, not for anybody else.
Okay. Makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about suicide? I saw Soylent Green, where you could just line up and just go like into a telephone booth and put in a quarter, and then all of a sudden you're going to be made into patties. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not so into the patty part of it, but you can kill yourself. The problem is you need to be certain about whether it's going to work or not. And you're leaving a mess.
Right, it's irrevocable.
Somebody else. Like if you jump off a building.
Talk about a burden. No, yes.
Right. It's a mess. So a lot of people disagree with death with dignity and they call it suicide. I don't. I think the semantics is really important. It's death with dignity.
Well, let's talk about like your earliest fascination with death. Why, as a child, was there any death when you were a kid?
Yeah, my grandpa died when I was about 7, and my dad's dad. And it was the first time I ever saw my dad cry, which is always weird for a kid, right?
Right.
But I just, you know, he was lying there in the coffin because they did the whole, you know, Catholic funeral thing. And it was like, wow, what's happening here? I don't know. It just, like, what's happening? Why?
Right. What do you remember from the funeral?
My dad crying. And just this whole idea of like, we're put in this casket coffin thing and we're just gone.
Did it look like your grandpa as you remembered him?
Well, you know, embalming doesn't typically make you look like yourself, but wax, like a plastic Madame Tussauds, a wax museum thing. I don't like it. I don't like embalming. Of course, if you want to choose that, that's your choice. But me personally.
Yes. Do whatever you want with your own and your loved one's bodies.
Yeah. But I saw my aunt and she was all waxy. I never did see my mother's dead body. I chose not to.
Okay. Because embalming was created. I read half an article once. I don't have enough information about this, but it felt like it was a real business opportunity.
Well,
it got started.
But actually, it got started because of the Civil War. So it had already been.
Did it?
Yeah. Somebody in England, a doctor in England whose name I can't remember, had developed this method of removing the blood and putting in a chemical like formaldehyde. They use formalin now and some other things, which are still pretty toxic. But because so many soldiers died in the Civil War and they were so far from home, their families wanted to see them, right? They, you know, your kid dies on the battlefield 300 miles away. How are you going to get him home so you can give him the burial you want? So they started embalming a lot of the soldiers.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So I thought they just buried them at the space.
Well, sometimes they had to, you know, I'm sure
families
didn't have the money because I'm sure it was not.
Oh, interesting.
And, you know, you had to embalm them, put them back on a train, ship them home. So yes,
right.
Families with money could do that. And from there, it just really, you know, just really boomed.
Really took off. Because were you killed during the winter or did you die during the winter and you want to be buried in spring? We're going to pump you up a little formaldehyde
and
put you on ice for a couple of months.
They didn't have really great ice houses back then. And, you know,
And then wait for the spring thaw and then have a bunch of funerals, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, so the funeral industry sort of realized, hey, we can charge a lot of money for this. And then they developed the whole misrepresentation that it was really important for you to see the dead body of your loved one that was part of the grieving process. And we know now that that's kind of bullshit.
Well,
bullshit.
Yeah, fucking A.
You don't have to see. Yeah. I chose not to see my mother's dead body. And that was 12 years ago. And that was not what affected my grieving for her. It was, you know, other stuff.
Right.
Do you need to see the dead body? Not if it doesn't look like the dead body. Not if it's not the person you remembered.
There's a couple of different sort of cultural and religious people who like to see the dead body. Mm-hmm. Like people sit Shiva, which seems to be a Jewish thing
but not with the body. The body is
not
buried.
With the body.
No, Jews don't embalm and they bury the body within 3 days. That's the rule. So Shiva is a wonderful thing. I actually want people to sit Shiva after I'm dead, even though I'm not Jewish. It's 7 days where you come to the house of the dead person and you bring food and you support their family and you just sit with them and you talk and you hang out. It's like an Irish wake, only it's 7 days.
Right. I was going to say that's the other one I've heard of is it follows the burial of a loved one. So, yeah. So the mourners stay at home, refrain from work and certain activities, and receive visitors for comfort and support.
Yes. And I've been to a few, and they're really wonderful.
Yeah. That's just sort of respectful and just sort of you spend a week actually grieving and talking to people who knew that person and kind of the good stories and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
My brother Russ wants to do storytelling. You know, just tell tales of of my dad.
Right.
But this was 10 years ago, back before he was driven mad by my father.
Oh.
right now, I think that my dad dies. He's like, it's been great. Bury him.
Right.
Let's end this. And
well, hopefully you'll have someone at the funeral home or like myself, I'm a funeral celebrant who will sit down and say, you know, you might want to actually do something for your dad. You might not feel it fully right now, but let's slow down. Let's wait and talk about different ways we can honor and celebrate your dad.
You're a celebrant.
I am a funeral celebrant. Yep.
So you go to, and what does that mean? What does that, you tell people, is it like a party planner? Like you tell them what to, have you thought about buying?
Right.
Okay.
What color balloons would you like?
Yes. No,
it's I'm really there for people who don't have a priest or a rabbi or a pastor who does the funeral, right? So your grandfather dies
you're the officiate.
Correct. Like people do weddings. I do funerals.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I do funerals.
What's the prep on that?
Oh, I sit down with the family for an hour, maybe 2 hours, and figure out what they want and then plan the ceremony. And then if they want me to be a graveside for the burial, we can also do that. But I'm not a funeral director. So I have to work with funeral homes to do this. I can't just be independent. out there. Like a wedding person can just.
You know. Right.
So it's
just hang up a shingle.
Right. And it's not the perch of the internet. I mean, I went to training. I'm a trained certified celebrant.
Right. What was the training like? Was it longer than being a cop?
No.
Probably.
Probably. It was 3 solid days of, intense.
All right. Let's cut the police slightly more credit than that. Somewhere between a cop and a hairdresser. So, 3 solid days of just sort of
talking about how to do funerals and how to work with people and how to respect people's religious or non-religious views, how to deal with family.
How do you deal with if somebody who's super, like if they're evangelical, but don't go to church?
Well,
give you some scenarios.
Yeah. That would be hard for me being very non-religious, very secular.
Right.
But I'm there for them. I'm there for the family. So I would plan. I would speak. Yeah, I would speak. They may choose to have someone else come up and read a poem, something like that. But if they're evangelicals, they probably have very strong ideas of what they want. So my job would just be to help them, integrate it into kind of a complete ceremony. It could be 10, 15 minutes. It doesn't have to be. Funerals do not have to be an hour long, like weddings.
Same with weddings. Mm-hmm. Note to self out there.
I know. Yours was beautiful and brief. And there was food. Yes. So.
And I think funerals should be like that. Just 15 minutes of service. And then people get to tell speeches if they want. And then you just kind of mingle around and you have some chow.
Well, there we go. Now we have yours planned. And I hope that I can be the celebrant if I'm still alive.
Well, we're burying Chris this week. Andy's mama and his stepmom are both in this room. Actually, he's on a tour with Chris.
Right, he's touring with the ashes. So she was cremated.
With the ashes right now. So both Fran and Chris were cremated. Mm-hmm. And Fran's mama was buried up in Oroville where Andy grew up and where they all lived.
In a graveyard.
In a cemetery. Yep. Mm-hmm. And they bought a plot. She bought a plot for Fran and Chris next door.
Oh. And so this was grandma. Yeah. Grandma bought a plot.
Yep. Grandma Gage. Gage. I think it was Gage.
I love that. Replanning.
Yeah. Sure. And then, so we're going to go up there this week and bury the boxes.
Oh, nice.
And I don't know what he's got planned. He's got all kinds of stuff where there's he wanted to put a bench. Did I tell you this?
Oh no, that's great.
Yeah.
I love those kind of things.
Yeah. So in the cemetery, he was talking to the cemetery about dedicating a bench near their plot so that people, when they come to visit their own loved ones, have a place to sit. Because we've all been to a lot of cemeteries and it's a lot of standing.
There is a lot of standing around, and that's not good for people who are mobility
older,
impaired.
Who are usually the people visiting the dead. And I will say this is that like the funeral home where the cemetery where my my mother and my grandparents and everybody's buried, you can park the car right next to it. And then open the car doors and sit in the car doors. Not as cool.
No, but in Wisconsin in the winter, it's probably all you want to be doing.
Right. But wouldn't it be nice to have a bench?
Yeah, it would be.
And so Andy was, he was given a lot of bench options. And he just wanted a stone bench with just a little, brass plate.
A little plaque. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And not even a plaque, just a little one. He was offered the entire back of the bench, like it was real estate, like a real estate ad, with pictures of Fran and Chris.
Oh my! I didn't realize they were doing this now. Like,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
See, there's money. It's just it's a lot about.
It's a real cash cow.
Don't get me started. Taking advantage of people who are grieving and who you really want to honor your mom and your stepmom, don't you? And it makes people feel guilty Like, I guess I should spend the money. No, your mother would want you to put that money in your 401k, actually.
Yes. At all times, your mother would love to put that in the 401k.
Right? Because, you know, most people don't want millions of dollars wasted, excuse me, on their funerals and on their grave sites. And grave sites can be really expensive. But, you know, you can do a lot of different things with the ashes. You can make jewelry. You can make little stones. You can make
stones, or
you have it made. You have the ashes made into a kind of
like fake diamonds and stuff. Yeah. Where they
so you can wear your loved one on your hand or around your neck if you want.
Right. Some people,
if you want.
I mean, what, your mom wasn't making fun of you enough? Is you just want to think what would she say at this point? She'd say, "Do you need dessert?
You need to clean the bathroom right now.
Right now. When was the last time you changed your sheets? When was the last time you changed your sheets?" And I mean, some people have urns in their house.
Yes. Yes, they do. Mm-hmm.
We have a couple of shotgun shells.
It's big with pets. People like to have their pets in urns in their house. Pet's ashes. Yeah. Pet funerals. Well,
we've had Fran for the last 6 years here at the house. And
do you talk to her? I mean, do you find it?
I don't.
Do you find it weird? Do you find it comforting? What's
I don't. Thought? I'm not a huge fan of having dead people's ashes around the place.
Okay.
But just because, I mean, Andy has buried any number of animals in the last 12 years because his dad died probably 12, 13 years ago. And his dad wanted his ashes put into shotgun shells and then shot into the sky.
Really?
Yes.
And guess, did that
there's
work?
A lot. Yeah, we have 10 shotgun shells. So during the fires, I was like, so if our house lit on fire, there would be shotgun pellets and gunpowder.
Oh, my God. Gunpowder in your house.
Right. In our house. It's not ideal. And he's
I'd
like,
rather have the
and
ashes.
He's like, it's not that much gunpowder. But
come on.
Turns out people are like 10 pounds of ashes, right? Is that right?
Yeah, I would say it's about this big, you know, like a shoebox kind of size. Is about what you
but dense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ashes.
So about 10 pounds. So 10 pounds of gunpowder of shotgun shells.
Okay.
I think Cindy has hundreds of them left. So
wow.
I don't know if she's
all of his ashes in.
Right. It felt they sent it to the shotgun company that does it. Cause there's different things there's all kinds of companies that are like,
yes.
Sure. We'll take the ashes and integrate them into your world. Do you have a favorite one?
Do I? No, no. I'm a big fan of rather than cremation, which isn't great for the environment. I'm a big fan of composting, where there's just dirt left, and then they put that in a forest.
Talk to me about why you are not in favor of cremation.
It's actually very bad for the environment. The smoke that comes out from the crematorium, the amount of energy that has to be used, because it's a really, really hot furnace, right? It's really hot. And there's differing numbers, but it's like the equivalent of driving an SUV 300 miles, like in terms of the gas and the, you know, what it does to the air. So that's kind of a problem.
I drive an SUV 300 miles all the time. That's very sad.
Yeah.
So it's
a little better than burial because we're frankly running out of space and that's also not great environmentally. Basically, there's not much we can do to not be a burden on the environment. That's just how it is.
Right, right. I went to a funeral once in Hong Kong they swap the people out. They bury them. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of that?
Well, yeah, and in New Orleans, they do it. If you've been to New Orleans, right? And you
I
know
have
how
not.
The cemeteries are above ground because the water table's so high. And the guy described it to us as basically like a pizza oven. So you put the body in and it's so hot there, you know, you're in this big granite or marble thing, super hot. And the body basically disintegrates and then the pieces fall down through the grate and then there's space for the next body to come in. And he literally said it's like a pizza oven. So I thought that was pretty cool.
I don't enjoy that analogy.
You don't.
But just because I used to work at a pizza restaurant and there's nobody, you don't cook a pizza so long. There's nowhere that it doesn't, there's no grate.
Right. I see where that analogy saying that it just, falls apart. Yeah.
Right. It just looks like a pizza oven. Is that what he's saying? Because it's just
layered.
It's just a slab.
Slab. But it's actually very, you know, and then you can put the whole family over the years into this one grave, which saves space, right?
Okay. And then because you stack people because it,
and there's no coffin, right? And that's the problem, is that we bury people in coffins and the coffins last for 100 years. They're lead lined to prevent the body from leaking out into the dirt. So there's lead, there's pine, there's all the, you know, paint and lacquer that you put on it, all of that seeping into the ground.
Oh, right. And the groundwater, which is not what anybody wants.
Right.
So how do you compost a body?
Well, it started up in Seattle. So again, right, Seattle, Oregon, California, and Colorado. It's also legal in Vermont and New York State, but we don't have any facilities yet. So they basically put you in this big kind of round drum that's filled with hay and some alfalfa, and they just put you in there and your body breaks down in 3 to 4 months.
But they don't have to rotate it like regular compost.
No, they don't. No, it doesn't have to be rotated. No.
Okay. Well, I only know that I am poorly composting in my own backyard. And one of the problems with the compost is that I'm not turning it often enough, is what I'm
right. Doing. Right. With our bodies, we have enough microbes that they can do the job from any direction. So it's
right.
And you can go and visit your loved one whilst they are in, while they are busy decomposing, right? You can go visit them. There are several beautiful facilities up in Seattle and around Seattle, where you can sit in a nice quiet room and be with your loved one. So it's nice. And then you get about a cubic yard of dirt when it's all said and done. And they take out, you know, they'll take out your fillings, or if you have a fake, you know, if you have an artificial hip or knee or something, they'll take those out.
Before the composting?
No, after. Like they'll pull them out.
Why bother? Yeah.
And they won't compost. Yeah. And then you can take a little bit of the dirt home with you if you want, or you can just have it all spread in a forest, and it helps the forest.
Okay.
It's nice, but you cannot bring it home.
Even if you've been eating,
it's not.
You cannot.
No, we're not safe to put on vegetables. You put on rose bushes or something, but now there's, we don't.
Not food?
Not food. No.
Then probably, I mean, now that we've said it out loud, it really does make sense. I don't necessarily want to be composted, have a friend or family or myself composted, and then all of a sudden, 2 years later, I'm part of the tomato crop.
Right, because what if the tomatoes don't work out? They'll blame you. Well, we hadn't put Jackie on that. We would have.
What if my
tomatoes.
Face turns out in a tomato? What if all of a sudden?
Well, we've found Jesus in tomatoes, I suppose. So why not? Why not?
I'm not saying that I'm Jesus and that I would show up like Jesus. I'm just saying that that if you put people and then all of a sudden there's an eggplant and you're like, that looks like Jim's penis.
Yeah.
Is there anything there?
Yeah, no. No one's ever really said that to me before.
Well, welcome to the Dork Forest, Teej.
Yeah.
TJ Ford, by the way, is working on, she's trying to be respectful. She doesn't realize that the Dork Forest is, while a celebration of the thing that you're obsessed with, is also funny. So deathready.org, and it's Substack is Death Ready with TJ on Substack, and at Death Ready Coach on Instagram. And yeah, so do you have yourself planned? Like what you're going to, how you're going to die?
Well, it's a problem because I want to be composted, but
right,
I'm living on the East Coast and there's the facilities are only on the West Coast. So you got to fry right. my body, which...
Much like the Civil War. Maybe there'll be a new Civil War and they'll yes, just please. Incorporate it right into...
Yes, please. Let's not talk about that. Because death is much more fun.
And cheerful. Yes.
Than the current so much political more sitch. Yeah.
Than the current political civil war leading up to. But.
So ideally, the other thing is, you know, what I really enjoy thinking about is burial at sea. You can still get buried at sea.
Can you now?
Yeah, you can. Yep. You have to find someone to take you. And you have to be taken out a certain distance. So you have to be a certain distance from land and a certain depth of the ocean. But
you know why?
What?
I watch a lot of light murder mysteries and there's always a body washing up.
Like NCIS or?
Yeah, NCIS is the perfect. No, I won't watch a Law and Order just because I don't care about the order part. I watch a lot of British. I don't know how many people are being killed in Great Britain, but it seems to be an awful lot. And there's a lot of hobbyists that are solving those crimes.
Right. And those are called, what are those called? Like the,
they're not called cozy mysteries, but almost. They're almost called that, but they're not entirely.
Okay.
There's a genre within a genre.
But
like, for example, Madame Blanc. Madame Blanc is a show that was made during lockdown by like a bunch of actors who were like, what if we went to Majorca and pretended it was the south of France and there was an antiques dealer who solved crimes? And so it's her and all of her old friends. Like there isn't a young, beautiful person in the entire cast. It's amazing.
I love it. There needs to be more Madame, of those shows.
Right, Madame Blanc, I can only recommend it is for the music. That goes into it is the cheese balliest. And then there's fantastic. There's fancier ones like Signora Volpe. Signora Volpe is a woman who works for MI6 who goes to Italy and she wants out of MI6, but MI6 is like, oh good. You're in Italy. And that's the premise of that show.
Are they all British? Like, do they all start out in England?
In England. Well, it's all that's left of colonialism. And
don't we have our own Miss Marple to solve problems?
Well, clearly not. And or if they do, it's in French, and I have yet to see it. There is an Italian show called Lydia something, and that is amazing. And it is in Italian. You can get it dubbed in English, but I recommend Italian subtitles, and it's about a woman who wants to be in the early 20th century, who wants to be a lawyer in Florence, and it's against the law.
Right.
Or it is not legal, shall we say.
Right.
And so it turns out she solves crimes on the sly. Her brother's a lawyer and he'll help her and she'll help him. And together they are. And she is just trying to get, validated because she's fighting the good fight for women's rights.
Hey.
And then there's a weird one called Harry Wilde, which has Jane Seymour in it. That is set in Dublin. And that one is, she plays a retired English professor.
What's the name of this? I got to watch this one.
Harry Wilde. And she is, Harry Wilde is a retired English professor and her son works for the police. And she has a young high school sidekick, young man, who's very, very charming.
Good looking and charming and Irish.
Good. And they're all Irish.
With that accent.
And, they're very, and then, but of all the races, it's a very diverse cast. It's nice.
All right.
It's not just a bunch of whitey magoo Irish people. It's all just
the
people who grew up there.
And, yeah.
And happen to have an Irish accent, right. Much like America.
So there's dead bodies in that, I assume.
There's dead bodies in that. It's
there's a lot of dead bodies.
I'm not the hero of this story. Let's tell it anyway. The first time when I had only met Asian people who were either immigrants or students, because we went to college together, TJ and I.
Yes.
And we lived with a lot of mainland Chinese immigrant students who their English was better than my Chinese.
Oh, absolutely.
They
cooked really well. Do you remember when they'd make those dumplings and stuff on Sunday?
Right, because it was a co-op and we all had to trade off cooking they would cook.
I loved when the Chinese women would cook. That was the best.
Right, because they would do it, because we all did it in teams. Mm-hmm. And so then I did stand-up comedy in Minneapolis and I met no Asian people.
Oh.
Except for Asian people that were also immigrants. And so when the first Asian person I met, who was a comic, and this probably isn't true, but the first one that I remember, where he's Japanese, and his family has been in this country longer than me.
Wow.
Longer than my family.
Right.
Easily almost 200 years, 150 years. Kevin Kataoka, he's been in this country long enough. His parents were interns during World War II.
Yeah.
But that was interesting when, it turns out if you are in America for more than one generation, your kids are going to just sound like Americans.
They are.
Or Irish or wherever you happen to be.
And then people still say, no, where are you really from?
Right. And then you want to go, huh? So there's composting, and you would like to be composted, you would have to figure out. But that's sort of planned, like how do you plan your death, right? You have to plan your death to some extent, or what happens after you die.
Yeah, you don't have to plan your death, but it's going to be nicer for the people you leave behind. Because if you don't plan it and you don't have a will, then it's chaos for everyone involved. And you lose a lot of money and time and people get really pissed off at you and it's just not good.
It's just a mess.
No.
What should you do?
Well, you should talk to me. You should come and hire me because we go through all of it. We go through your possessions. We go through what you want done at your funeral. What do you want done after you die? What do you want done with your body? Do you have a will in place? What are you doing with your money? What are you doing with your baseball card collection? All of that stuff. And we also look at sort of the emotional aspects of it. Like, how are you about dying? How's your life been so far? And if you were going to die in a month, what would you regret not doing? That's one of my favorite questions. And so then we talk about, is there some way you can do that so that you don't die regretting that you didn't go to Mallorca or someplace?
I have to say that as soon as you said that part, I was like, oh, that's the TJ I know. The one who's like, wow, how do you feel? How do you, let me meddle briefly in your brain box.
Hey.
And how do you feel about dying? How can I help that? How can I make you feel better about it?
It's good. Yes, exactly. Wrong. Exactly.
Yes.
How can
that's
I make
the TJ
you feel
Ford
better
I know
about
yes.
dying? I do workshops and I work one-on-one with people, and everyone who has worked with me ends up, they come to me and they say, I just feel a lot better about it now. I was going to say at ease.
I thought you were going to say everyone I've ever worked with is now dead and they seemed happy enough.
Actually, not true.
To go.
Because
has anyone died?
No. I like to work with people well ahead of that. I'm also a death doula, which is the person who kind of sits with the dying person. They help the family, much like a birth doula, right? You're kind of there just to be an assistant. But that's not quite my jam. I prefer to work with people well before they're dying. Because once you're in the process of dying, you don't want to sit around and worry about if your will is updated or, if your mortgage is paid off, or you don't want to worry about that, right? You want to be spending time with your
local. So do you have like a workbook?
I do.
And
I'm working on a book. I'm working on a workbook with a friend of mine in Wisconsin, actually, to have a fun, interesting place where you can write down all of this stuff. and keep it in some place where your family can find it when you die.
Right. But there's no, because like it, for this, it's not like the jobs that you have when you want to work with people about death. There's the hospice workers. I know a couple of people who are hospice nurses.
Right. They're nurses generally. Yeah.
Right. Or they're the home health people mm-hmm. who also mm-hmm. do, who are really good at cleaning people up in their final days.
Yes.
You know, because it's Elizabeth Decker, who we went to college with. She is a hospice nurse.
Oh, she is.
Yeah.
Oh.
And nurse.
I should interview her for my newsletter.
Sure. And the when Chris passed, we had she went into hospice twice. Oof. And because they thought, well, she came out of the hospital and she was just so whipped. There's something that happens in hospitals where there's an actual syndrome, like a hospital syndrome thing, that where you get paranoid and scared, and there's not because there's nothing familiar,
right? Right, and you're in those rooms with those curtains, and you know,
24-hour people just kind of waking you up,
and
they're trying not to
prodding you, and
but shifts change, and they got to make sure that you're still alive, and they got to make sure you're getting all your meds. And she was in the hospital for too long. She was in the hospital for 3 months.
And if you have a roommate, it could be even worse. I mean.
Right. And well, and then she went into, so she was essentially dying when we got her into rehab. And so she regrouped.
Wow.
And then she stayed in rehab like a week too long. And then we got her home.
Did that,
and then,
did that depress her too, the rehab? Because those places.
Well, eventually.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, I mean, when you think about, they're nice people, but they're also at work, you know?
Right. Right. Yeah, they're doing their job, and then they get to go home at 6 o'clock, and you get to stay in there. Yeah, it's tough.
Right.
My mom was in a rehab, and it was really very depressing.
It wasn't a
good rehab. No.
They had music one time at Chris's, and I was like, "Do you want to go see the guy sing?" And she was like, "Not particularly." And I said, "And yet we're going."
Right.
And then we. And the other thing is if you end up being stuck in one of those rehabs, and I say this in all seriousness, get out of the room. Like Chris could have eaten her at least one meal with everybody else.
Yep.
So if you're in an old folks home or you're in a rehab, go into the common area as much as you can.
Yeah.
And get in a fight with another old person. Just something.
Or... yeah, fall in love with another old person.
Right.
Rehab.
Right. See, TJ Ford, always glass half full.
And have sex, but have safe sex, because gonorrhea and syphilis are going wild in the assisted living homes.
Oh, right. The 55 and up.
Yep. Fact. It's a fact.
Right. Right. Right.
Yeah. So you got to be safe even when you're 80, 85 years old.
Right. Because you're not going to get pregnant, but you don't want to itch down there. So get it together. No, and make sure everybody's clean. And and here's a fun, we got time. Mm-hmm. Unless you want to talk about something.
No.
You got another death talk?
I love talking about death. That's why I'm here.
Well, what other death talk did you want to talk?
Well, no, I mean my whole goal is to make it fun and funny. So talking to a comedian about death is really the best thing I could do, because you people can make everything funny.
Hmm. Well, I don't know. I mean, death isn't, I don't think there's no reason not. I've had so much death. And it's not that much death, but it feels like there's been plenty of dead people in my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't, I remember when my mother died, there was no mourning, which is unfortunate.
Oh, yes.
Right. Because I mean, with children, like how would you deal with children? You don't know anything about kids. What do you do with them?
You mean if a, if a child's mother dies or if a father.
Yeah, yeah.
Or
like a child. Like, dies. Like if, you know, if, well, let's go both sides. Yeah. Let's say, let's say there's a 7 year old, the parent has died, mm-hmm. and you are tasked with talking with the family, including that child.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do? How do you make it?
Well,
better.
There are a couple of good books. Don't ask me the names right now, but there are books about ways to talk to your child about death and, or a child about death. And you have to kind of judge where they are cognitively, right? Like if they're 2 or 3 years old, it's going to be really different than if they're 7 or 8. And,
or if they're 14.
Or if they're 14. I mean, and really, you know, kids are a lot smarter than we give them credit for. They know what's going on. So you can't just say to them, well, grandma just, she just left. She went away. And no, she won't come back. And they'll be like, well, why? What happened? You know, so you want to be honest with them, as honest as you can be for their level of understanding. And, you know.
So when somebody does say, well, where do people go when they die? What do you tell them?
I say, well, that's a really good question. And
that's a, you know, really good stalling technique.
I was a teacher for 25 years. So, yeah, I know how to stall. And I mean, you kind of have to get a sense from the family of what they believe. Like maybe they really believe that everybody goes to heaven. So I'd say, well, okay, you know, grandma's up in heaven with, you know, grandpa and cousin it, or, you know, whoever happens to be in heaven.
Right, right. And the dog and everybody.
Right.
And her mom and everybody's up. Everybody's up in heaven.
But it's really,
if they believe in heaven.
Yeah. I mean, it's not my job to put my philosophies on them. I mean, obviously there's going to be some other adults in the room and there's not just going to be the 8 year old. So I would actually defer. I would look to the other adults and say, you want to take this? Because it's not for me
right.
to tell
so,
your kid what's right. happening.
The weird grandparent. The weird thing about this job that you have, though, is because you're not a nurse, you're not a hospice carer, mm-hmm. you're not a therapist, and you're not a psychologist.
No, and I'm not a financial advisor, and I'm not a lawyer.
You're not a financial advisor. You're not a lawyer.
Right, Jackie, I'm not anything. God, well, come to the dork forest. You're nothing. Well,
that's not it at all. I'm just trying to figure out what the, I mean, you're mostly just like a, you, anybody want to talk to me about?
Well, you want to, if anybody? You want to corporatize it, I'm a consultant, but I like the word coach better because I'm not a therapist, but I can help you to see what's going on in your own head and give you suggestions as to how to straighten out whatever's going on in your head. Right. So I'm a coach. I mean, that's really what I am. I don't like being an end of life consultant because that really just sounds like I get paid more than I get
paid. It doesn't really roll off the, tongue either.
No.
And, so the people who hire you or the people who hire other, like, you know, people who do this.
Yes.
And have done it for a long time.
Yes, I do. Yep.
How long's the longest person that you know? How long have they been doing it?
Oh,
like
probably
5 years, 2 years?
Probably 10 years. No. Probably 10 years. And I think people have been doing this forever without it being paid, right? Particularly
women, without it being a job.
You know, women kind of end up being the caretakers or caregivers in the family, doing the organizing, doing all that stuff, right? Especially around birth and death, basically the same thing. So now we're just at a point where, you know, our family systems aren't that integrated anymore, right? We don't have one family living in one house and all the rest of your family lives in that same village, right? So that you can get together and help each other through a difficult time, like a death. So we're scattered around the world. So mm-hmm. I think it's helpful to have somebody kind of be able to come in.
Have you seen the process of any of these people? Like, have you watched it? like sort of them doing the interview process with the family or with the person. And
no, I haven't
like,
watched
I know
it,
that,
but yeah. I did take classes with a group called Willow End of Life, which is based out of Vancouver.
Great
group of people. Yeah. And the Canadians, yeah. You know, the Canadians kind of got there first as they do.
Well, there's only 30 million of them. They can specialize more.
Maybe,
but actually it doesn't even make any sense. You would think if there were more people, there'd be more specialization. And, I'm trying to figure out like what actually, I mean, if you're talking to somebody about when they're going to die and you're just like, I mean, there's a line in Harry Potter, RIP JK Rowling. So sad. Weird hill to die on, sister. Anyway, but there's a line in it where in the first Harry Potter book where Dumbledore says, because the Philosopher's Stone, the Sorcerer's Stone, is an immortality stone.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy has it. Wow, I'm forgetting his name. It's been a while. But he has the Philosopher's Stone. He's got the Sorcerer's Stone. And he has to destroy it.
Who has
so
it?
That Voldemort Snape? Doesn't get it.
Oh, no.
No. A different professor.
Gandalf,
a minor character.
Not the same, not the right book.
Not Dumbledore.
No.
Not Dumbledore. Did you never read the Harry Potter books?
I did, but it was 20 years ago. And
okay.
I forgot.
And but there was a line where Harry says, when the guy destroys the Sorcerer's Stone, he says, so Harry says to Dumbledore, so he's just going to die then. And Dumbledore says, yes, but a guy who's lived as long as that, he knows, he's learned that death is really the next great adventure.
I love that.
It's a great line.
It's a great line.
And yeah. And
if you can think of it
really
that way, then maybe that will take away some of your fear and anxiety. Maybe it is a great adventure. And you know what, I'm starting to see people who have their funerals while they're still alive.
Because you want to be at
the party, right?
You want the accolades.
You do, right? And it's amazing. I had a friend in Portland who was dying of pancreatic cancer, and she was not going to go gently into that good night. And so she had a party. People came from all over the country to celebrate her. And it was like a roast, mm-hmm. kind of, right? People got up and said, mm-hmm. oh, I know her from this part of life. And
I remember these. Yeah.
And it was amazing. And then she died, you know, maybe 4 or 5 months later. But how great is that? How great is that to have all your friends come and tell you how much they love you? Like,
mm-hmm.
because that's what we do at funerals. But I'm already dead. I'm not going to.
At my mother's funeral, my stepmother's funeral.
Oh,
actually, Nancy Cation.
Yeah.
In Nancy Cation's funeral, her brother came up to me and asked me for $300. See, if she would have been alive and Greg would have come up to me, I could have said, why don't you talk to Nancy about the $300?
Wow, and I would have loved to hear what Nancy Cation would have said about that.
Well, here's the thing about Nancy Cation's funeral. Her sister at some point changed from a regular outfit into robes with a giant crucifix.
Oh my gosh.
Because she had become some sort of pastor.
Oh.
And I looked at Darla and Andy and I said, hey, this is when Nancy would have left. So we're leaving.
And did you leave?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
For you.
Yeah, we did. Sure did. Well, there's no reason.
No, this is a situation where, I mean, maybe Nancy didn't have her funeral really well planned. She, like most people, didn't want to think about it.
Well, yeah. And it was unexpected, her death.
Ah, yes. As many of us will have unexpected deaths, which is why
it's
never too soon to get your death wishes in order.
Yeah. And Andy and I, we don't have any kind of will or anything or trust or any of that. We got to get that going.
You got to get that
Chris
going.
Does.
Right. And, mm-hmm. and for people like myself who do not have children, it's really important because there's nobody to step in when I die. Like when my mom died,
right.
it was like her daughters stepped up. When my father dies, my sister and I will step up. You know, when Nancy
my father,
died, he did. So
my favorite thing No, I didn't. I believe Russ did. And her brother and sisters did.
But there was a kid, right? There was a child mm-hmm. saying, hey, this is a parent. We want to do it. And I don't have that. So mm-hmm. I really need to make sure that someone's the executor.
Well, one would imagine your sister would step up. As I would imagine my sister would step up.
I don't necessarily want her to.
Right. Well, no, it isn't. And just it isn't fair to family, insist that no. she does.
And just yes. because they're family doesn't mean they have your best interests at heart.
Well, here's my thing. I'm gone. As my father likes to say, here's what I want you to do. I want you to stick a bone up my ass and let a dog drag me into the woods.
And Elliot,
I was like, I don't know where he heard that.
Wow.
But here's the thing. My father does not want to be planted in the Armenian cemetery next to Nancy. Wait, next to his first wife, next to my mother.
Oh.
Nancy was.
Where's Nancy buried?
She's buried next to her parents across town in Cudahy.
Oh.
And my dad, but my grandmother bought a plot for my dad next to my mom.
Yeah.
And my dad's like, I would like to be planted in the VA. Can I please be planted in the VA? And Russ is like, no. And Darla's like, I'm not going to two funeral. I'm not going to two cemeteries, Dad. You want to be visited?
Why can't he be buried in the VA? He's a vet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He can be buried in the VA, but it's untidy. It's not. Everybody wants him to be where everybody else is.
Oh, I see.
So his wishes are not being considered.
No, they're not. They're not.
No. But you know what? A lot of our wishes were not considered when he was a child. So sad, too bad, Dad.
But and see, that's where I like to think that I could help because I'm also a mediator, right? I learned how to be a mediator when I got my master's degree. And so helping families figure out these kind of things is also part of my skill set. Like,
right.
Like I had a client who, the dad wanted to be cremated. Fine. Here's his ashes. He never said what to do with the ashes. All four grown up children had different ideas. We got to put him with mom. We got to separate him out amongst all four of us. No, we got to keep him together. I want him on my mantelpiece. No, we got to, it was a mess. It was a mess. So.
Because people forget, you know, when you have four kids. That guy was all of their fathers.
Right.
You know,
he was.
It's like, he's not just my dad.
Right.
And he's not just my brother Russ's dad. And he's not just my brother Phil's dad.
And you got
and the
five
fact that
of
Scott
you,
and Terry,
six of you.
Six.
Six of yeah. you that you have to.
Right.
Let's get together and mediate the Cation family. Oh,
no.
That'll be fun.
Oh, no. Yeah, not it.
No.
If We're you're too- willing to talk to Terry Cation. I can't do it right now.
No.
It's he's published his own Bible, and I assume that he's just put a line veto on everywhere you're supposed to be nice.
Wow, a self-published personal Bible. I kind of like that idea. I would do it
yes,
as a nice...
Yes, it depends who...
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm reading a Franciscan monk. It's called something about... It's a Franciscan monk named Richard Rohr.
Hmm.
And he is, you know how the Catholic Church has been around so long that they're not worried anymore about they could be more academic about Jesus.
Okay. Instead of being real and practical, even though they're losing people by the day.
Right, but they bought land. They're fine.
Oh yes, I've been to that land, and it's more than fine.
It's the Catholic Church, and then McDonald's are the greatest real estate owners of in the world.
I prefer and, the Vatican to the Golden Arches, but there you go.
Well, that's interesting because some people would go the other way. And you were raised Catholic.
Yes, I was. Patrophilia, spirit of sight.
I like talking to Jesuits and
they're
Franciscans.
The best. They're really the best.
Yeah. So he's a Franciscan monk and he's got a very human Jesus. He's like, people are so into Jesus, they forget the Christ part. And the Christ part is the part where you're supposed to sort of become a better person.
Right. That's the be nice, treat your neighbor as yourself kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the, yeah, that the actual parts of the gospel where he was like, be a decent person. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know how we got on this, but, and I'm not rewinding. Rangers. You guys, I'm talking with TJ Ford. She's got a website called deathready.org. She's got a Substack. Check out the blog. Essentially it's a blog, right? It's got a paywall and you can support newsletter.
Yeah, it's free.
Substack.
It's free if
it's
you
free
want,
at this time.
You can pay.
There you go. There you go. Or you can pay.
I encourage
it's
payment.
Death Ready with TJ. And these will all be in the notes. And Death Ready Coach on Instagram. So
that's me.
That's you. So we're almost at an hour.
Oh,
is there?
Darn.
Yeah.
It's been so fun.
It happened.
Yeah, it did happen.
Rangers, did you hear the excitement in her voice? It's been so fun.
It's been so fun. No, I think that if I can do my tiny part to make death a little less scary and to make it a little more part of life.
Chris was scared. Yeah, Chris was super scared and she didn't want to go. And about a week before she died, my friend Anna Villanzuela, who's been on the show a couple of times, she said, Chris, you're in so much pain. Are you ready to go? And Chris goes, No. I would like to take everyone with me.
Well, wow. Or so, just be out of pain. I mean, you know, the medical community has to step up, and because a lot of people want to die because it's so uncomfortable. And, you know, hopefully it doesn't need to be. Hopefully, in my case, there might be a lot of morphine coming at me.
They gave us some morphine and they took it with them, of course, just in case anybody wants to come on over.
You don't.
No, you don't want to leave morphine. It's
no, you don't.
Telltale heart in my house. I would just be thinking about it all the time going, oh,
well, there's a good, morphine? You know, if you want to read about death, Poe's your guy. And also movies. Like, there's so many great movies about death.
What's that? What's that? A cartoonist guy? Something Gory?
Edward Gorey.
Oh. Edward Gorey.
Yeah,
that guy had an obsession with death.
Yes, he did.
And if you're ever on Cape Cod, you go to his house, which is now a museum.
Oh, it's on Cape Cod.
Yeah, it's on like Chatsworth or something.
Oh, darn.
So we ended up accidentally. I looked on TripAdvisor, you guys. Here's the other thing about getting old. You'll open a TripAdvisor. You'll say to yourself, what are there? Are there things to do?
Right, right.
And they will sometimes recommend the same things, and they're boring. But sometimes it'll be something interesting, like Edward Gorey's house.
Yes, and we walked past.
Andy loves Edward
Gorey. We walked past Edgar Allan Poe's house here, and I'm in Philadelphia right now. And we went past his house yesterday, where he and his wife lived and died.
All right. Yeah. Philadelphia, where they're doing good work with sandwiches. Hey,
they are.
Rangers, it's been an hour. TJ Ford, go find her. It'll all be in the notes. Thank you so much for doing the show, TJ.
Thank you, Jackie, for talking about death and not avoiding it like everybody else. But like I said, comedians, you got to please get on this. Please make it funny for us all. I know comedians hate to be told what to write jokes about.
Yeah, I got to write what you know. Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat, my hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?